Adele Cox is a Bunuba and Gidja woman from the Kimberley region of Western Australia. Adele spent the majority of her early working life in the Kimberley region in media and in suicide programs, prevention programs, sorry. Since 2001, she has lived in Perth and worked on a number of projects and initiatives. Most recently, her work has taken her into Indigenous health research, having worked previously at the Telethon Institute for Child Health Research and as an academic at the Centre for Aboriginal Medical and Dental University of Western Australia. She currently works as a full-time consultant on various state and national projects, predominantly in the area of Indigenous mental health and suicide prevention programs. Adele has been an active member of several communities at both the state and committees at both the state and national levels. She is currently a member of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mental Health and Suicide Prevention Advisory Group, the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Leaders in Mental Health, and the Australian Suicide Prevention Advisory Council. Can I also say that Adele won an award in 2014? And from the Human Rights Commissioner for Children for a suicide prevention program that she developed and delivered in Western Australia to help reduce suicide rates in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander youth and children. And I think that alone, I think, is pretty good. And that's when I met Adele. She was a member of the Western Australian Ministry Council for Suicide Prevention, the National Advisory Council for Mental Health, the National Longitudinal Study of Indigenous Children, Indigenous Children Steering Committee, the Oxfam Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Reference Group, and the Task Force for the Shadow Reporting of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. Adele is the former chairperson of the National Indigenous Youth Movement of Australia. Please, make welcome Adele Cox.
Apologies, moral of that story, I sit on too many committees. Aunty Matilda, always a pleasure to see you. And this is a woman who every time I come, I admire her chicken spunk. And she certainly still got it. The glasses, she says it's because the lights are hurting her eyes. I think she's just trying to make a fashion statement myself. And she looks very spunky. My acknowledgement and pay my respects to the Ngunnawal people and the Ngambri people. As Vanessa said, I'm a long way from home, in fact, diagonal straight on the other side. Central Kimberley is where I'm from, but I was born in Broome, so I have only have birthrights in Broome, is what I tell people. I would like to acknowledge and thank Ken for his introduction and welcome this morning. And like Carmen, I've had the pleasure of working alongside Ken in the 18 months that the only time that I've ever been a public servant was as a senior consultant in Aboriginal education when he was director of Aboriginal education in Western Australia. And that was about 16 years ago when I first moved to Perth from Broome. If we can go back to the cover, because those slides are actually going to come at the end. I'm actually going to talk to you. And if you, with permission, let me do something as a trained facilitator I'm used to doing. And I actually like prompting and looking to you guys in terms of getting a bit of interaction and engagement. Tony, thank you very much for your invitation. Thank you, Vanessa, for your invitation to come and speak today. And I wasn't really sure what I was going to talk about, but given the topic and given the discussions that's happened this morning, I can certainly say that I am about to feel at home, because what I'm going to talk about is acknowledging the niceties of what Ken's spoken about this morning in terms of government's commitment to a lot of the things that we're here and wanting to focus on. I'm in fact going to be a bit, I'm going to play devil's advocate. And if you let me, I'm a curious person, as I think our peoples are. We're very nice, but we're curious. And randomly, can each table, if the tables that have larger numbers, I'm curious to know who we've got in the audience, because forgive me, but I don't know. I've got a couple of former colleagues that are here. So random, one person who's happy to volunteer, tell me your association, your organisation, or your interest.
Well, I'll go. My name's Bruce Simmons. I'm a dentist, tropical dentist from Alice Springs.
Thanks, Bruce.
In 1974. Been here, been in Alice Springs since 1974. Is this on?
Unless it's for recording purposes, I don't think we need the roving mic. And I'm sorry that I'm disrupting the whole program, but I actually...
I'm a committee freak like you. I've been on the Board of the Public Health Association, National Rural Health Alliance, Australian Healthcare Reform Alliance. I guess I'm a... My father was a socialist, so I maintain. I'm an outright green, and I can't see any other way of living.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. I'm sticking with dentists. Now, Bruce went over what I asked. Thank you. But yes, a couple of words in terms of who you're representing or who you work with or for. This table.
I'm happy to go. I'm Helen. I'm from an organisation called Marathon Health, which was spawned from the transition from Medicare locals to PHNs, and we cover the whole of the western part of New South Wales. So a third of our programs are for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and another third of mental health, and the other third of other things. So they're highly relevant, everything I'm hearing.
Okay, I'll do my disclosure now. I apologise in advance. And I, in fact, showed her how to use the coffee machine, so we're already friends. This table.
Oh, I'll speak up. I'm Fiona Brook, Policy Advisor with National Rural Health Alliance.
Thanks, Fiona. Middle table.
Oh, my name's Peter Davin. I'm here from the Doctors Reform Society.
Thanks, Peter. This table in the right in the middle.
I'm Al Ford from James Cook University's College of Medicine and Dentistry. We're the only college that's really focused on rural, remote, indigenous, and tropical medicine. And I also represent the Australian Society of Physician Assistants.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, I'll go to Harry because I know Harry. Thank you. Down the end and not Ian and not Tony. Look, thank you very much for letting me do that, because I think it actually makes it more related for me in terms of what I want to speak about, but also knowing then how I can specifically get to your thinking and try and persuade what happens at the end of today, particularly in terms of ACRA setting its priorities going forward. As Vanessa said, I've worn many hats. I actually started off as a broadcaster journalist. I've worked in Aboriginal education for a very small window of time, ended up going into the area of mental health suicide prevention, and I guess that journey for me started in 1998 when my 9-year-old cousin hung himself. I'm not a clinician. I've been working in this space 18 years now. Feels like a very long time. You know, people who work in this space, because the issues are quite confronting. You know, often people ask me, how do you create fun, or how do you, have a normal life where you are able to switch off in terms of what you do? Unfortunately, for a lot of us as Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people, our time doesn't switch off. Our professional capacity doesn't switch off. And often, thank God for our humour, that we can, one, have a good laugh, we can make fun of ourselves and each other, and we're allowed to do that. You're not allowed to make fun of us. I can make fun of her, she can make fun of me, that's okay. But it's because we're sisters and we love each other. I've spent a little bit of time actually teaching medical students. And the greatest lessons that I learned in the 5 years that I was working with Professor Helen Milroy at the Centre for Aboriginal Medical and Dental Health at UWA was in fact the stories and the things that I learned from our non-Aboriginal medical students. And I was there over 5 years, which gave me a really great opportunity to see students come in, you know, as year one or year two students. And I remember the hesitation, the grumblings that I heard from students going, why do we need to learn about Aboriginal health? You know, students would skip class. I would call students out who were watching YouTube, you know, in my class while I was teaching them. And to see the transition from that to then being there long enough so that when they were actually in and doing their clinical experience, when they were actually in at the hospitals and had to use a lot of what we taught them, you know, head on, the difference in students' perceptions around why it was then important, and they finally got it. The light switched on and they went, ah, now we know why you taught us what you taught us. But the fact that what we taught them was easily transferable to any other non-Aboriginal population, any other minority population, which I think has been a problem in this country when we think about reforms particularly, is that we try and box everything in, we try and fit everything in. And it's certainly been the case for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health, mental health, suicide prevention, whatever the topic is. We try and fit something that we know as Aboriginal people isn't going to work. But in fact, if you let us take leadership, if you let us develop something, do something properly, we know that what we do right can easily be transferred in terms of being, you know, easily done for you guys and your population. That really put me in good stead in terms of me thinking about the work that I've done since then. I have been working the majority of my working life in suicide prevention. As a consultant, I've certainly been given lots of opportunities that I've taken and I've absolutely made good use of. I've sat on a number of committees with a number of people here. One of the committees that I am on, or was on, because our term expired at the end of December, Harry Lovelock, who many of you will know, Harry actually, through the APS, provided secretariat support for the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Mental Health and Suicide Prevention Advisory Group, which was a ministerial advisory group, primarily to Minister Lee, but also to Ministers Nash and Minister Scullion. So we had the interplay, I guess, between health, Indigenous affairs, and a commitment there from all three ministers in terms of the work that we were doing. That committee and its role and its expiry, yeah, that stopped at the on the 31st of December. And we've still got a ways to go in terms of providing government with key advice on a number of initiatives. Some of the work that we were heavily involved with previously with the Labor government was, for the first time, the development of an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander suicide prevention strategy. The previous Labor government committed $17.8 million towards its implementation. We had a change of government. This current government has honoured that commitment. They've quarantined that money. We still haven't been able to get at it, and they've been in office and in power for how long? We've since been informed that that money, along with the $85 million that Ken spoke about this morning as a direct result of the National Mental Health Commission's review, and I was actually the lead Indigenous consultant doing the work around the Aboriginal specific review components for the National Mental Health Commission with my colleagues at HMA. All of our recommendations that were put up there, and we've finally saw the government's response to the National Mental Health Commission's review. In terms of Indigenous mental health, we were certainly very happy when we heard about Minister's announcement and commitment of $85 million. Very shortly after, though, we were told that that $85 million, in terms of its direction, its spend, everything is going to the PHNs. We don't know what's happening. We're actually in a position now where we're trying to uncover, discover, find out what the heck is happening. Whilst we know that through the PHNs, They have and will ensure that the Aboriginal community control sector is involved in terms of the planning, in terms of the governance arrangements that each of them have set up. Unfortunately, we know though as well that in some areas, not of all of our AMSs or ACHOs are actually, not all of them have an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander CEO. So again, we potentially are going to lose out on some of the good work and certainly our goodwill and intent that we've been working on for the last little while. I'm yet to be convinced, and until I am, I don't hold very nice views about lots of things at the moment. And I, bumping into a few colleagues this morning, was hoping that, through this network, we could actually have some robust discussions in terms of asking the tough questions, but also working together strategically to find ways forward to ensure that what we know are the priorities, what we know are the needs in terms of Indigenous mental health and suicide prevention particularly, are going to be looked after. Our ministerial group was also responsible for the oversight and the development of the renewed mental health and social emotional wellbeing framework. The previous framework expired in 2009. We're in 2016. As far as I understand, and Harry can correct me, the work that we've done in terms of the writing and the development of the renewed National Aboriginal Mental Health and Suicide Social Emotional Wellbeing Framework is currently sitting with this government and doing its rounds across governments in terms of providing the final input. That document historically was the only document prior to the national health plans, that was the only document that actually had COAG sign-off. That was our only opportunity to actually make some really great progress in this area, in this space. Unfortunately, though, what happened was previous governments took with and really gave focus to, and rightly so, the broader SEWB in terms of the stolen generation. So we had the establishment of the link-up services and that sort of thing. What they totally missed was all the other mental health stuff that we'd put in that document. Missed all of that. So we've got a continuation, but sadly I hear there's been some reduction in terms of services and monies that have been kept for our stolen generation organisations. We've had a continuation of support for initiatives like that. What we haven't had is the full commitment that we need in terms of addressing all of the other broader mental health areas. So the renewed framework at SMSPAG, all these bloody acronyms. We provided government and departments with advice on a number of things. We helped them to develop and write the ATAPS guidelines specifically for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and accessing ATAPS. We've had input into better access over the years. We've had input because the Department of Social Services sit in our committee as ex officio. We've had input into FAMS. We've had input into government's e-mental health initiatives. We've had input into lots of things. And you can imagine then, how pleased we were when we heard that this government and Minister Lee actually announced and said that they were going to support $85 million worth of what they call new Indigenous mental health initiatives. We were overjoyed. And despite my cynicism, I am actually a really optimistic person. And those who know me know that. But as we navigate our way through in terms of finding out what is going to happen and how we can, one, ensure that government is actually receiving the sound advice it needs to, given that a lot of their advisory mechanisms and governance arrangements, have ceased or are discontinued. We want to ensure that the work that we've been doing over the last little while isn't lost. In working in the suicide prevention space, I wanted to just mention some work that we're doing at the moment, and it's a part of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Suicide Prevention Evaluation Project. This one has an acronym as well. It's ATSISPEP. ATSISPEP is actually though funded through the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, not through Department of Health. And we've actually had this work being championed by Minister Scullion as the federal Indigenous Affairs Minister, because he, in his travels obviously to Aboriginal communities, one of the first things that communities respond to or talk to him about are the high rates of suicides in our communities. As I said, my introduction to this space wasn't nice, and it was quite unfortunate that, you know, it happened as a result of my 9-year-old knowing how, where, when to hang himself. 9 years old, you know, and I often tell people that in terms of my journey professionally and personally, I don't think the path, you know, I didn't choose the path that I walked down. I think the path chose me. And I've been very blessed with the opportunities that I've had to work in this space, but also equally as frustrated, because in, you know, the almost 20 years that I've been working in suicide prevention, the fact that I'm not even 40 yet, you know, has, the level of frustration I've had along the way, you can imagine, without me having to detail or explain. 1 in 3 deaths for our mob between the ages of 15 and 35 is likely by suicide. These are, whilst they're stats, whilst they're numbers, we know that governments and you know, we like to use numbers in terms of highlighting our plea, highlighting, you know, the need to address particular issues. You know, the 1 in 3 is a hard, harsh reality for a lot of Aboriginal people. And there's probably not many Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people that you're going to meet who haven't been impacted by suicide in some way. Minister Scullion publicly said it was an epidemic, and, you know, given the numbers that we're seeing, and Vanessa's point, you know, very early on when she started this session, about questioning the accuracy of some of the stats and data that we all rely quite heavily on because we assume that it's right, you know, there's a lot to be questioned and a lot to be desired. Part of the work that we're doing with the evaluation project is also to look at speaking to our colleagues who are working in this space to see if we can, once and for all, actually make some progress into looking at ways forward around getting real-time data. I know that as a member of the Australian Suicide Prevention Advisory Council, this is something that's been on our agenda. I've been on that council 7 years. That's something that, you know, we spoke about quite regularly with the coroner's office, you know, speaking to our statistician friends in terms of saying, how can we actually do this? One of the things that we're doing with the evaluation project specifically for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander suicide prevention is to look at if we can actually, you know, develop systems or develop ways that we can get faster, more accurate data around suicide, both completed and attempted, much more quickly than we would otherwise if we had to wait for the coroner's database or if we had to wait for the ABS and AIHW. The other bit of work that we've been doing as part of that is Minister Scullion, in his commitment to wanting to address this issue, and remembering now that this is coming out of Indigenous Affairs, not out of Health, even though mental health, suicide prevention, that mandate sits within Health. We've not had any commitments from Health or Minister Lee at this stage, although I know that as government they have supported the work that we've been doing, but I just wanted to make that clear distinction that, yes, this is actually being funded out of Prime Minister and Cabinet, not Health. We've been in the field as part of the evaluation work. One of the things that we said to the Minister quite early on is that the fact that our families need better and greater supports and different sorts of supports on the ground after a suicide occurs. We have, and he recently launched and announced formally the work that we've been doing around Indigenous critical response. We are focusing heavily and actually using Western Australia as a pilot site, one because our team is obviously located in WA, but also because we've got some good runs on the board with some work that we've been doing in partnership with the WA Mental Health Commission for a little while now, looking at Aboriginal suicide prevention. My colleague Jerry George Artis and I have been in the field since prior to Christmas, actually working with communities and families on the ground to try and almost be the facilitator slash mediator slash, you know, the conduit between families and services. One of the things that we knew we needed to get in place and we needed to be ready to support is in the lead up to and just after Christmas seems to be, we call it, you know, for us Blackfellas, we call it the silly season. But the trends show us that that period is when our families are most vulnerable, and that's the period when we actually see the spikes in suicide attempts and actual suicides. And we've been working in a number of regions throughout the state, particularly in Kalgoorlie and the Goldfields, because we had 5 young people who suicided in that region over an 8-week period. And for us, visually going in to support the families, because what the families are saying that they're needing, the services on the ground are saying, well, we've, you know, we've been there, we've approached the families, they've not wanted to see us, and then the family's going, well, actually, no one's come to see us. That's part of the role that we, you know, and the work that we're doing is to actually try and find the middle ground between getting services to understand what families' needs are and that there are different stages and phases, but also then getting families to understand what services can and can't do as well, because we acknowledge that, you know, services and organisations on the ground are pretty stretched as well. I can see Vanessa's fingers going. Is that my cue that I need to wrap up? So, look, there's lots of stuff. I didn't even get to the guy or jewelry, but I am keen to leave that stuff there. And I feel like was my time cut?
No, you can keep talking.
It was. You haven't given me half an hour.
Oh, sorry. Please continue.
So yeah, look, I can ramble. These are my notes that were notched up this morning in terms of making sure I didn't forget anything. But one thing that I am really keen and interested for you guys to look at and consider is some work that we developed and we've been doing, and we've been gathering support along the way as part of our National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mental Health Leaders Group. Technology works. Is to, one, introduce to you, if you haven't already had an introduction to, and also to, through your chair, gauge whether this is something that ACRA is happy to support. And given that I've come here wearing my Natsimal hat, yes, I'd be in very big trouble from my chair, Pat Dudgeon, if I didn't go through these slides really, really quickly. So the Gaiajui, which translates into proud spirit, and I'll tell you a little bit about how that happened, is our own version of a declaration that was actually put together by the Whareratā Group, which is an international mental health leaders group through the International Initiative for Mental Health Leaders, IMIL. And Professor Helen Milroy, along with Sir Mason Jury and a few of the others from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, primarily, developed this Whareratā Declaration, which had core principles in terms of how we support Indigenous mental health leaders, but also support Indigenous mental health initiatives. The National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Leaders in Mental Health Group is a group that's actually supported by the 4 commissions here in Australia: the National Mental Health Commission, the Mental Health Commission of New South Wales, the Queensland Mental Health Commission, and the Mental Health Commission of WA. Each of those 4 players actually contribute some financial supports towards supporting our secretariat and the work that we do. And what we give in return is provide them with broader support, advice, and direction in terms of what each of them should be doing in relation to Indigenous mental health. The Whareratā Group, though, which is an international Indigenous mental health leaders group, and it's still in operation, it's still running, And its vision, when it was first established, as I said, by those few individuals, was really around the negative effects of colonization on mental health reserved, and that Indigenous peoples have renewed pride in their culture and their ability to succeed in wider society and have visibility as contributing members in each of their countries. As far as I know, it was spawned out of the IMUL, the Indigenous, the International Initiative for Mental Health Leaders group, who have been running for a little while, and part of that was the need to look at how we better supported Indigenous mental health leaders from each of the respective countries. NATSIMUL members, they vary, and you can see there some names, some of whom you guys will know. So Pat Dudgeon is our chair, and she's there also as one of the National Mental Health Commissioners. Tom Brightson, many of you would know Tom's work in New South Wales. And Carmen, you'd know Tom, given that he's from Orange as well. Sandy Gillies used to work for the Queensland Mental Health Commission. She has since taken up a senior role with the Queensland Aboriginal Islander Health Council. Tom Karma is on there. Dr. Robin Shields. We have Nacho represented. Annie Grayson Smallwood is a member of NATSIMUL. Vicky Hovain, who's an Indigenous psychologist, but also working quite heavily around family and domestic violence issues. Myself, Richard Weston, as the CEO of the Healing Foundation. Denise Andrews, who is the senior bureaucrat at the Queensland Mental Health Commission. Cliff Collard there as representative from the WA Mental Health Commission. All right, so I'm going to skip through. All right, so what we did was we took the Ferirata Declaration and we said that we wanted to indigenize it. We wanted to make it our own. And so we went out and we consulted with a number of our key stakeholders across the country, and we actually had quite a large forum in Sydney where we got groups of people together to discuss the declaration, but also discuss, one, whether they thought it had merit, whether it was something that they were interested in looking at, you know, adapting. And two, then we went through a process where we actually call for and got people to input and provide contribution in terms of the adaptation, so that we developed our own declaration based on the sort of broad core principles of the original Ferirata Declaration. So its name and meaning, Tom Brightson, because we had that original meeting in Sydney, we thought that we would continue in that spirit and actually ask the local Gadigal elders for a name, and, you know, to assist us to develop a name for this declaration. And that's when they provided us with Gaya Jui, which translates to proud spirit. So our declaration has five themes. Theme one is that Aboriginal social and the concepts of social and emotional well-being, mental health and healing should be recognised across all parts of the Australian mental health system and in some circumstances support specialised areas of practice. Theme two, that Aboriginal social and the concepts of social emotional well-being, mental health and healing combined with clinical perspectives will make the greatest contribution to the achievement of the highest attainable standard of mental health and suicide prevention outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Three, that our values-based social emotional well-being and mental health outcome measures in combination with clinical outcome measures should guide the assessment of mental health and suicide prevention services and programs for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Four, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander presence and leadership is required across all parts of the Australian mental health system for it to adapt to and to be accountable to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples for the achievement of the highest attainable standard of mental health and suicide prevention outcomes. And five, that our leaders should be supported and valued to be visible and influential across all parts of the Australian mental health system. By all accounts, I can certainly see that ACRA, through its membership and certainly having Vanessa on as part of its executive, is doing just that. We certainly need to get other associations and organisations to follow suit. There are a number of calls to action as well that we put forward, and that for all Australian governments in a bipartisan approach, and in particular their health and mental health departments, to formally adopt and commit to supporting the Gaia Dewey by the 30th of June this year. For all Australian governments, and in particular their health and mental health departments, to work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders in mental health and related areas to develop an implementation component of the Gaia Dewey by the 30th of June next year. For all mental health professionals and professional associations and educational institutions and standard-setting bodies that work in mental health, and also those in areas related to mental health, particularly suicide prevention, to formally adopt and commit to supporting the Gaia Dewey by the 30th of June. And for all mental health professional associations, educational institutions and standard-setting bodies that work in mental health, and also those in areas related to mental health, particularly suicide prevention, to work with our leaders in mental health and related areas to develop an implementation component of the Gaia Dewey by 30th of June next year. I'll end on that, and that I think gives you some food for thought, and I would, as I said, certainly be keen to look at, one, whether ACRA has the capacity to sign up to support the work that we're doing as part of the Gaia Dewey, but also I think in terms of those calls for actions, keen to see from your own respective organisations and associations whether or not you would be keen to support and sign up as well.
I don't have to support.